Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. And if you are aware of the work that Richard and I do, then you know today is Saturday and we're here. A little bit of information from us. Hopefully you call in with some of your memories and information that you have. And as you might believe, I'm here with Dr. Richard Presser. Richard.
Hi, Carolyn. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Richard. Just delighted that you are here. If you get our emails, then you know that today I feel we really have an exciting show, exciting information to share with you, because one of the things that we're going to be talking about is ley lines, rods that are used to locate ley lines, and other topics. And I find that this is a very fascinating topic for many reasons, because I'm going to bring forth a lot of information about this from the Akashic Records. So, with regards to you being here, Richard, we're just delighted to have you here, and you can fill in some loose ends, so to speak.
Fill in the blanks, you might say.
Yeah, I got a few blanks here for you to fill in.
I hope this is not time for a crossword. I never have a crossword for you, Carolyn. You know that.
I love it. Indeed, you do not. Now, if you're not getting our emails, Richard, just tell the audience real quick, because we do have new people coming on board. How would they get information in our emails and where most of our work is?
Well, the best place is to go to our main website, the 2012countdown.com, and go to any page on that website, and at the top or at the bottom of any page, you can enter your name and email address and hit enter, and you will receive an email for confirming your registration, and bingo, it's all done.
Absolutely marvelous. Good way to connect with us. So I want to go back to my beginning with regards to ley lines and the energy that comes from it, and dowsing. I remember as a young child, I was at my grandfather's, I guess you would call it a farm. He owned 16 acres. And on this place, there was no city water. People had to depend upon a well. And when my uncle was ready to build his house there, the first thing that they wanted to do was to find out where there was water, because that would depend where they would put the house on the property, and they wanted to find the supply of water that was the strongest. And so my grandfather lived in a community of farmers, and it's really interesting. We'll talk about this someday, where they planted their crops by cycles of the moon and harvested by the moon. So they used the sun and the moon for many of their farming techniques. And they called one of the gentlemen who belonged to this group of people to find water on the property. And I was young. I didn't really know anything about this. But I followed the gentleman around because I thought it was really interesting. And I can't recall now what tree he wanted this wood from. But it was a special tree that he found. And there was limb shaped in a certain fashion that he wanted. And so what the limb was, if you can imagine a limb that where it divided and there was two limbs going in two different directions. So when you would cut it down from the tree, it looked like a Y. And he walked around holding the two sides of the Y, and the bottom part of it he held in front of him. When he found water, this was so fascinating to see, Richard, because that part of the tree limb that he was holding came across water, and it literally shifted and pointed down to the earth. It was quite an amazing thing to see. Did you ever watch anybody douse, Richard?
I have. Yes, I have. It's quite fascinating. And there are lots of different ways that people go about it, as you say, using a limb as you've described. I've also seen a guy working with a couple of wires, and these were just bent at right angles, and he had one wire in each hand, and they were pointing away from him. And when he came to water, these wires would line up with the flow of the water, and they would turn one way or the other, depending on which way the water was flowing. And if I recall correctly, if it was a natural stream, they would tend to, as I say, point in the right same direction. So, for example, if the water was a natural stream flowing to the right, then they would turn to the both turn to the right and point in the direction of that stream. And if it was a pipe under the ground, a man-made pipe, then these would both point inwards. I think I have that recollection correct. But I actually used this guy to locate where I might place a bore on a property. So I didn't actually do it, but it was very interesting to watch this at work.
A bore? What do you mean, a bore?
Oh, what you might call a well.
Oh, okay. You know, this Aussie translation sometimes gets a little exciting.
I Keep love you on it. Your toes.
That's right, even when I'm sitting down.
Indeed.
That's quite a sight to see. Anyway, Richard and I both have this experience of people looking for water, but actually this same process was used to douse for ley lines. And in England in particular, there is quite a collection of ley lines that they have mapped out. And for anybody who's familiar with this, they call them the Mary and the Michael lines. And it's they find them just like they do with dousing for water. Now, Richard, I have my own thoughts about this. What do you think is working at the, what shall I say, during something that is done in this manner? What do you think is behind this? What energy is being used? How does this work?
I think it's probably related to magnetic energy is my sense of things, that there's a disturbance in the magnetic field of some sort that's being detected.
Well, I would agree with that. I would like to take it a step further and say perhaps this is man's thought also working. In other words, a human being has a question about something and they're looking for an answer. And as Edgar Cayce said, thoughts are things, and these thoughts go out and find the answer for the individual. What do you think of that?
Well, it's an interesting perspective. I think that's quite an interesting option.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm aware of people dousing for minerals like gold and silver and other metals by dousing a map, which is an interesting thing. So they will douse on a map and then go look for the metal or the stone that they were looking for. So there's a lot of applications of this. And the only thing that I could come up with is what I just said, that the thought that you have goes out and it brings back the information that you want. Now, you were saying you think it's magnetic?
Well, I don't know for sure. My sense is that it has something to do with the magnetic field, yes.
So let me ask you a question, your opinion about this, because it just brought up something in my mind. As a human being, you've done a lot of looking into background energy and so forth. Are we in some fashion hold magnetics in our physical body?
Well, it's interesting. I'm not exactly sure what form you mean that, but of course any electrical current in the body is is an electromagnetic field by definition. And so the body, at the very least, carries a sensitivity to electrical and magnetic fields. So certainly there is, on some level, some awareness of magnetic fields.
Interesting, don't you think, that perhaps the body, we know, is a transmitter, and, you know, we've been told many times in the work that we do that the body acts like a radio tower.
That's true.
Transmitting thoughts, and, you know, if there is this connection somehow to these magnetics that we're talking about, the mind and the body is such a powerful combination here. And we've talked about bringing information from the cosmos and outside of the cosmos by intention and sending out the request. And so to me, all of this fits very well. And I send this thought out to the people who are listening to this because it might give you an objective or a new idea as to bring forth information that you're really looking for. And I also know, and I think you would agree with us, Richard, that everybody can do these things, but it is a matter of trust that you bring forth these things. What do you think?
Yes, I think that's true. Certainly trust is part of it, faith and belief. And also I think there is a skill that is involved with this to an extent, a familiarity with it, which I think allows the sensitivity to this to be refined a little. So, yeah, all those things are at work. And I, when I had this guy doing this divining work on for me, just investigating this, I tried it for myself, and it just, you know, it just worked.
Well, I'd like to add something else to that, Richard, from the work that we've done with people with right brain magic and being able to have this sensitivity to see into the next dimension. I would also add to what you're saying is practice.
For sure. No question.
We have a teacher teach us something, and then we really need to practice what we've been taught for it to be habitual and really set into, you know, to set into the mind and heart and develop the skill. But I think we all have these skills to begin with. So, I got interested in this topic. You might say it was a thread that went to last week's radio show when we talked about the Templars working with the Gothic cathedrals and how pilgrimages were done on ley lines, and these temples were built at places that would activate the heart chakra and people could attune to these higher levels of knowledge. So it is the reason why I thought we would talk about ley lines and the other some other topics that we're going to touch on too. And I went to my computer and pulled out, you forget sometimes, or at least I forget sometimes, this Akashic information that I get. And I pulled out something that I had taken a long time ago and found that it really did resonate and was duplicating what Richard information that Richard and I had have gotten recently through other means other than the Akashic records. But I have found it so exciting that when I pull out records, older records from the Akashic information that I have stored in my computer, how they just agree with one another. Sometimes in that agreement, it's expressed in a little bit different terms, but the truth behind it is just so exact. Isn't that amazing, Richard? I know you've seen that yourself.
I find it fascinating how that unfolds.
Yeah, it really is. So I don't know what year this was from, but it came to me some time ago, and it was, I had done some work on the radio show quite a few years ago about ley lines. And what I had gotten from the Akashic records is we know on some basic levels about prana, and we call it different names, but the in the Akashic records, they use those words, but they also use cosmic energy. And they denote that cosmic energy is the building block of all creation as it comes from a source or all there is. And this energy comes down upon all creation, no matter what galaxy one might exist in or whether one lives in many dimensions. Now, this I find fascinating because it's the sort of thing that I'm really moving towards. Healing, renewal, and they talk about energies that need to be renewed occasionally. And they talk about two things. The force that keeps creation in balance is the sound of vibration that is carried by the cherubim on one circular round, so that every part of creation is balanced and counterbalanced also by stars, planets, and every other force and creation in the cosmos. Richard, do you want to take a second and talk about how the cherubim do that?
Escort vibration around the cosmos?
Yes.
Well, it's part of their mission to do this. I think most people are not aware that, if you like, there is this continuing communication, if you will, between the center of the cosmos and everything which exists within it. And so one of the roles of the cherubim is to carry those vibrations, if you will, to escort those vibrations, including the messages they might carry, throughout the cosmos, both in terms of the outward path and the inward path. And then when those vibrations and the messages that they might carry return to the center of the cosmos, they then strip that information off. And that information is then stored in the Akashic records of every being, indeed every expression of consciousness in the cosmos. And so these are the two roles effectively that the cherubim for the most part fulfill: one, looking after the Akashic records, the other, escorting or shepherding those vibrations around the cosmos so that these records can be maintained. And if you will, this overview, this tracking of all that's happening is tracked in this manner. So that kind of gives the picture. Is that what you had in mind, Carol?
Yeah, just because we work with it and it's kind of second nature to us, but there's lots of people who maybe haven't heard of this before. And so even those who have heard of it, it's kind of a good way to, you know, bring it forth in their minds again. And they're talking about, we just talked about how it is a sound of vibration. And it's quite fascinating. I've heard that sound a couple times. I heard it when I was very high in the mountains. I heard it one time when I was in Switzerland and we were in a very high part of the mountains in Switzerland. We were going up a cog railroad. And as we went up to the top and was coming down to the bottom, I heard the sound. It is so remarkable to hear this. I've only heard it two times in my life. One was in the Swiss mountains, as I said. And the best way that I can describe that is it sounded like the tinkling of bells, like when you see in Disney's show where the godmother takes her wand and waves her wand and sends out her magical gifts to someone. That is what it reminded me of. It was so exciting to hear this. The second time I heard it, I was in the mountains out west in the Cascades. And I've never heard it like on land, just those two times in the mountains. And it is quite exhilarating. I don't know of anybody else who has said that they have heard it, but just to hear that is so remarkable. What a gift. So, in this particular reading, it talked about that form of energy, the sound of vibration that the cherubim carry. And then they talk about a second force of energy that must be refreshed annually and actually quarterly. And the times are called the equinox and the solstices. This was one of the things that we talked about in last week's show, how the Templars set up these pilgrimages to get people to certain Gothic cathedrals at these times of equinox and solstices, because it is not the same energy as the vibratory band that the cherubim carry, but it is a renewable force that is found in the human physical and seasonal changes on the planet. And the reason that this is so important, and the Templars knew about this, is because of what happens in the physical body. Later in the reading, it talks about how people from what we might call the ancients, they understood sun's cycles. They understood these times where we had an intense cyclical high of energies coming to the earth. And I find this very fascinating because it says they placed markers in the temples which would show when a solar equinox would be portrayed in a design, and placed spirals in the design that counted the annual cycles. I found that very exciting, Richard, because when I was out west looking at some of the places that the American Indians had lived in, carved designs in rocks, it is what they were showing, these circles. And I didn't know at the time what it meant until I read this Akashic reading.
They fascinating.
Were counting. Yeah, it is. To me, it's very remarkable. They were counting off the cycles where what they were doing is counting off the 7-year cycle linked to the pattern of the sun cycles.
Interesting.
Because the energy is more intense during a cyclical high, and it was a marker for people to realize this is the time to connect, and it is the time of bringing great healing into the physical body. And what this means is it is beneficial for us to mentally direct this energy into our physical body during these times. First of all, during the solstice and equinoxes, but during these when the sunspot activity is very high. So that just blew me away when I read that. So what we gather from this is the more we cooperate with nature in all its physical forms, the more benefit that we can receive and the more aware we become. I wanted to direct your attention to a book that Shirley MacLaine had written. And Richard, you just got a hold of that book recently and started reading it. Well, I think you started reading it, didn't you?
I have, yes. You're referring to The Camino?
Yes.
Yes, I have just started reading it.
What was your take on what you've read so far? Anything you want to share?
Well, she does actually mention ley lines early on in the book. And I think she indicates there is a ley line that runs along that whole pathway. And she actually talks about the energetic shape of the ley lines, not something I've seen elsewhere or I've tried to validate, but she says in that introduction to ley lines that the energy is shaped like an hourglass. And so it is narrowest and most intense, if you will. The center of the hourglass is at the Earth's surface, and then it spreads out widens out, if you will, as it goes into the Earth and also as it goes out into the cosmos. So it's an interesting notion. It's like there's this focusing, if you will, of the energy along the ley line at the surface of the Earth. But I'm not very far into the book as yet, and it's the first of Shirley's books that I've read. I was just drawn to it. I saw some comments about it, and so I'm really just getting warmed up on it.
Well, I haven't read the book, but just sort of things here or there about it. One of the things that she talks about in the book is how, we know the physical body is a container for the soul, and that the original, we seem to understand that originally the soul was called an androgynous form, because both the male and the female energy, the two parts of the soul, came together, and it was called androgynous. And she mentions in that book how she had visions that back in Atlantis, that the two forms, the male and the female aspect of the soul, was divided, so that it was no longer androgynous. It was separated. And, of course, I think she was perhaps one of the first people who came out with that thought, and she took a lot of flack on that, as you can imagine. Anyway, in this reading, this Akashic reading that I was doing about ley lines and so forth, it happens to mention this, that this energy was cut off from the soul during the fall of Atlantis, and actually even before then it was separated. It was, the reading goes a step further than I think what Shirley said. The reason for this, that the dark priests wanted to divide the soul into two poles, masculine, feminine, yin, yang, is because that's where all of the memories of our past, in other words, the journey that the soul has taken, that was an ability that we had that was cut during that time. And so this reading gave the reason why they wanted to do that. It was a very intense, laid out plan that the dark went about to control humanity and to control the earth itself. Isn't that fascinating?
It is fascinating.
And so these energies that we talked about earlier that were more intense during the solstice and the equinox, if we become attuned to that, we can start to remember the past before this break and start to utilize the abilities of our soul. And some of the abilities were the ability to move between dimension, to master time and space, even in this realm that we find ourselves. Richard, you're good at this, I would say, and you teach other people how to do this. When we use the word attuned, what would you take from that word?
Well, to me, it implies resonance, perhaps. Almost an energetic connection, you might say. If you attune something, you're the process, it contains the word tuning, and so if something is attuned, it's like it's being energetically connected, I guess is the way to express it. I know one of the term gets used in relation, for example, to someone learning Reiki, someone studying Reiki. Part of the process is what's called attunement, and there is this attunement process that you are taken through by your Reiki teacher. So it's like this energetic connection. It's aligning this energetic connection, this energetic resonance, energetic awareness. So they're the kind of things that attunement means to me.
Well, I think that's perhaps a more advanced thing that I might think of. I was just thinking of basically the intent to become one with it.
Mm-hmm.
And during these times, that if a person had the intent to connect with this, that would be the first step in attuning to the energies. And of course, the more they did it, the more habitual it became, and the easier it is to step into that, how shall we say, way of life. And so that the dark, their intent on dividing the male and the female so it was no longer androgynous is because they could control the mind and all the abilities and resources that the soul brought into the physical form. So this other fact that I started discussing to you, I find really fascinating, and I wanted to touch on this. And we've heard Mother Mary talk to us about the earth being a vase or a vase, however you wish to pronounce it. And I never quite understood what she meant when she said that. Did you, Richard?
Well, probably not fully, but I just had the sense that on some level, all other consciousness rested on this base in some way. But I didn't really understand what she meant, I have to say. I just accepted what she said.
Well, you said an interesting made a part of the sentence, all consciousness rests on that. Well, that is what basically this Akashic reading is discussing. And it says, think of a vase where the base is smaller than the top of the ridge. Then this is how the vibrational signals of the cosmos work. Those who control the base could change any line of vibration that superseded all the way to the center of the cosmos. From the beginning of creation of this new galaxy to the present moment, Earth has always been a ground for struggle, as this was the place where the physical body was fully encased in flesh. And it connected Source in the center of the cosmos through the body all the way down to the core of the earth, what we are calling a Merkaba. And, you know, one of the questions that we have discussed in some of the conference calls that we have done with people is the dark, how the dark have taken over the earth, and how, you know, we were working to clear this. I have to say, Richard, I never realized how important that was until I read this information on what the dark was doing.
I agree. You can see why the drive has been so strong to control this planet.
And so what their plan was, if they could control the mind and the abilities and resources of the souls that came into physical form, and they could control all of the dimensions all the way up to the center of the cosmos through this vase, they believed that they could control all creation and send their nefarious plans to the Mother, Father, God in the center of the cosmos and hopefully control those powers also. It is the reason for the struggle since the fall of Atlantis. So what do you make of that? Fascinating, isn't it?
I think it is fascinating. And really, as you describe, it's a struggle that started before the fall in Atlantis with that separation of the androgynous soul and really the steps that led to the fall. Very interesting.
Yeah, I think it is fascinating. Now, we know that Atlan, we've come to understand that Atlan was the king of Atlantis. And you're going to like this, Richard, because there is so much here in these couple sentences. Atlan came as King Solomon. And he secured all of these truths, and his reason for coming then was to guard these messages with this division of the soul, what the plans basically that the dark had. He came as King Solomon. He also came back as the Templar, who gathered that information from King Solomon's temple, and then went back to build the Gothic cathedral. So, what?
That's quite a reading you've got there,
isn't it? So
when did you take that? When do you have a
Richard,
date on it?
No, I wish I had put a date on it quite a few years ago. And what we should have done instead of all this work we've done, just sat down and read this, huh?
Oh, well, that would have been interesting.
Really? And so what we're saying here is there has been this line, this thread from the very beginning, gathering this information. And of course, it had to be kept secret, but it was displayed in certain ways that people could find it. And so there is this long line throughout from Atlantis down to the present time. And so building the Gothic cathedrals was the way that the Templars could share this information. And so building the Gothic cathedrals was considered a success, but transferring the actual knowledge to the general populace wasn't. There was just a small group of individuals who could understand these truths. And you'll love this, Richard. It was rectified by setting up a path of pilgrimage for the devout members of the church. So the pilgrims didn't always understand what was happening. This was a time of great reverence for pilgrimages, and so the Templars were sharing this information without the world knowing what was happening.
Interesting.
And so the objectives of all of this was that they had to do all this in secret, but the objective was to open up the body's chakras to the powerful gates of energy coming to Earth at designated times. And so they used a methodology of designing a plan which encouraged pilgrims to come to certain cathedrals at these powerful moments when the energies of the equinox and solstices were in play. And, of course, we talked about the influence of the crushed gems that was in the stained glass windows. Actually, if you're interested in all of this, you really should read or listen again to last week's program. Richard, two places where they can find that on the webpage for BBS Radio and also on ours. Would you tell people how they could read that?
Yes, if you go to the 2012countdown.com website, you'll see a page there towards the bottom of that long menu of pages that refers to the BBS radio shows, and you'll find all of the shows recorded there.
So, taking this a step further, this was the ancient knowledge of the earth energies that was used in Atlantis by the priests. And what the priests were doing with these, you might say, putting their hands on this knowledge of the human body and the energies, that it was, they taught this information with regards to manifesting, healing, and aligning themselves with the grid system. That's what all this is about. Doesn't that blow your mind?
Yeah, as you say, it's a pity you didn't dig some of this stuff out a long time ago. It would have saved us a lot of work.
What, 3 years worth?
Yeah, could be.
Oh. And so all of this was there for the ancient Atlanteans. They understood how to work with these cosmic energies and its interplay with the earth energies, But the knowledge had to go underground because the dark took control over humanity, and this powerful knowledge had to be hidden until the time it was right for it to spring forth in new technology for humanity. And actually, Richard, this is what has been happening through all of the ancient societies, whether it was Atlantis, whether it was Egypt, there too that come into mind and resonate with me. But if you think of some of the golden years on the planet, different civilizations flowered. They obtained this great information, and then it had to go underground. And this has been the rhythm on the earth since Atlantis.
Yes.
Do you wish to take a moment or two and just, golly, it could be just a moment because this hour has passed. We're almost at the end of the show. real quick, do you want to talk about how the Atlanteans put that information on the temple and Atlan coming back as Solomon, how he found it?
I'm not sure what you mean, Carol. You want me to talk about what I know about all that?
Yeah.
Well, that's certainly something that's come forth in our work in various ways. We've understood that, in fact, there was an Atlantean temple built in the location of Solomon's temple, and indeed the key information that was being protected was actually carved on the pillars of that temple. And so Solomon's temple was actually built on top of that Atlantean temple, in part to protect the information that it contained. And it was really this information that the Templars were searching for in Jerusalem, why they were tunneling in the area of Solomon's temple, those first few early Templars. Was it 9, Carolyn? I can't remember now.
Yes, the original ones.
So they were gathering this information to take back to Europe. And as we know, they were then responsible for building the Gothic cathedrals. And so this key information, key understanding came from Atlantis, was taken to the area of Jerusalem, if you will, and was then gathered from there and taken to Europe and underpinned the building of the Gothic cathedrals along that ley line structure that was well known to the Druids and so on. So again, this information could be used in secret, as Carolyn was describing. So that's a pretty interesting reading you've got there. And of course, the thread that links all those things together is that Atlan, King Solomon, and the founder of the Templars were all aspects of Alora, the High Cherubim Angel. So interesting little background story, how all these things link together.
Indeed it was and is. This other information that I had with regeneration, because all this kind of links into one another, we're going to have to do next week, because I didn't realize that I had so much information here that we couldn't get all this in this particular show. But if you're listening to this show, if you review last week's show, then you got to be in tune with us for next week's show, because we're going to be talking about rejuvenation, the biology, regeneration, the biology of it, because it is a beautiful understanding to understand rejuvenation. So we have maybe 10 minutes. So we can't get into that, but do tune in to next week. If you love this information, you're going to love next week's also. I have been very fortunate to have been in places to experience so much of this. I've been on a couple trips to Europe where we were actually working with ley lines, and ley lines where they crossed one another, where the ancients marked those places, built cathedrals on those places dedicated to the Black Madonna. They're Black Madonna sites, and extremely powerful sites. The earth, I mean, these are things that I have seen, where these different Gothic cathedrals are located. They are also located there. The ones in France, we really did discuss last week, but the ones in England, we haven't spoken about. And I've been to some of the Gothic cathedral in England, where I actually saw the energies, the cosmic energies, come into these places, and then they go into the center of the earth, and as part of this energetic movement around the cosmos, when they come to earth, they go into these places where the Gothic cathedrals are, where there is like an in-breath, and then other Gothic cathedrals, the energy leaves, what I call like the out-breath. So it is like everything is alive. It is like it is breathing. And I was standing at night. This place, the Salisbury in England, it was so clear. They didn't have manufacturing there. And to see the stars was so incredible. And we were standing, myself and three other people, we were standing on a hill. We were looking down at the Gothic cathedral that is in Salisbury. And that particular place is what I would call an outbreath. And we actually could see the energy come out of that center portion of the cathedral, which, you know, a lot of these cathedrals are shaped like a cross. Well, it was the center where the two, you might say, arms crossed over the building. That was where it exited, and it would go straight up in the air, and we watched it. It looked like smoke. It was the most remarkable thing. We had all seen it, but to see the outbreath, we could see it because it was a night sky. The stars were so clear, and there we saw the smoke coming out of the center of that cathedral. It was remarkable. On that same trip, I was in Bath, England, and the cathedral at Bath was an in-breath. And so the energies came down from the cosmos. That was one of the places that was the in-breath, and I stood in the center of those wings, feeling that energy come through me down to the core of the earth. Quite remarkable. So I've been very privileged to see some remarkable things. Richard, we have about 2 minutes left. Well, no, 7 minutes. Would you like to talk, because we really don't have time to go into any of this other information, would you like to talk a little bit about something that we have brought forth to the public that maybe our listeners would want to listen to, like, you know, right brain magic, what that might mean, or some of these other things that we're doing?
Well, I think one of the most fascinating things that we do is the key past life sessions that you hold. I just sit and listen to those sessions in I'm awestruck by them, just the way that they unfold. Basically, in those sessions, Carolyn kind of really guides the process. She's not doing it for the individual. She's simply guiding the individual to unfold the particular lifetime that their soul is directing them to connect with. And very often, the individuals that come on these calls have not had any experience of connecting with what they can see or hear or feel. In other words, their clairvoyant or clairsentient skills have not really been activated. But with a little guidance from Carolyn, these doors begin to open, and particularly those who've already begun to open these doors to one degree or another, the sessions are just amazing what unfolds. And some of those are shared on the webpage on, again, the 2012 countdown, excuse me, the 2012countdown.com page, which talks about this. Some of those experiences are just awe-inspiring. If you've not listened to those, I encourage you to do so. And if you've not participated in one of these sessions, particularly if you've already had a soul healing session with us, then I encourage you to consider one of those sessions, because really what unfolds is just quite extraordinary. And of course, because of the skills that Carolyn has, she is very aware of the lifetime that your soul is guiding you to. So she's kind of there watching and guiding you in the unfolding of the experience. It is quite awe-inspiring to witness these things. I'm just spellbound every time they unfold. So there you go. You weren't expecting that, were you?
No, I wasn't. I really wasn't. I wasn't fishing for a compliment. I do know that during these sessions, I get so much pleasure out of seeing things like this evolve for people. You know, sometimes we have a tendency to feel like our soul started out young, so to speak, and gradually builds its way up. And we develop our skills. But I have found in these sessions that that is not necessarily so, that some of these sessions where the soul is encouraging people to visit have been very high points in their soul history. I remember one in particular that she was there when Earth was being created, and the role that she played. And here in this life, she's struggling with trying to open up her four clairs. You probably remember that, Richard.
I do, yes.
That was interesting. And so some of the people have seen themselves in temples as teachers, which is always interesting, through many countries. We've had many people who their soul wants them to see the lifetime that they shared with Yeshua and Mary Magdalene and the role that they played during that particular time, which is always interesting. What I find interesting about that, Richard, is sometimes these people who go back to those lifetimes had this, I don't know if you want to say inkling or intuitive part pulling on them, feeling, gee, I just have a sense that I was here on earth during the time of Yeshua and I want to know more about it. And then they find that they were a very enlightened soul working with Yeshua. And one of the things that I find so beautiful is when I tell them to look into Yeshua's eyes. Oh, the wonder of it all.
Truly.
Well, we have maybe a half a minute. I don't know what else we can say in a half a minute, not much. Well,
Carolyn, you'll think of something.
I did. I really did. And I thought of this. I wanted to thank you, Richard, for being here with me, being faithful, being my partner, as you have so many times, offered your assistance, bringing your light, bringing your gentleness, and being a friend. It means so much to me.
Thank you, Carolyn, for your kind words. It's such a joy to share in the sparkle that you are.
And I also want to thank you who listened to this, for being here, for sharing with us as we are sharing with you tonight. So good night for now.
Good night, everyone.